Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. And now, open for dinner, Monday through Thursday, 4 to 8. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. This is Taking Aim. I am Steve Woodward, joined by none other than David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, everyone.
Great to have you back in the big chair there. And we've got a lot to get to, and I'm glad you're here because there's too much meat on the bone this morning for me to tackle it on my own. And I need some assistance.
This should be a 7-hour program.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that off the air. But in any case, we would be remiss if we go any further without acknowledging our beloved sponsor, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980. Your go-to for breakfast and lunch, fabulous menu options, especially the new breakfast burritos. And now, Monday through Thursday, you can also walk in for dinner between 4 and 8 p.m. And owner Luke Black will be whipping up some tacos on designated Tuesdays, because you got to have Taco Tuesday, of course, because it rhymes and everything. But and then, of course, for your catering needs, the intimate office parties or the mega weddings of the century, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering since 1980. Go check them out, as I often do. A quick programming note. The executive decision has been made to declare a summer hiatus for this program, Taking Aim. We're going to be taking aim at some other activities, some of them out of the country, some of them geared toward more of a leisure mindset. Even as we barrel toward the midterm elections this fall, but we'll be on hiatus June through August. During that time, however, you can tune in and listen to some of the platinum Hall of Fame versions of
the best of
Taking Aim from months gone by, and you will be enlightened and entertained as you all over again. So don't worry about the hiatus. We will not leave you without content and entertainment and plenty of ammo to take down your neighbors and friends who hover in the shadows on the left, cowering in the darkness.
Well, you know, maybe they'll reach back in the vault way back when and play some of the older episodes so that people can see how brilliant we were in predicting the future.
That's a good point, and I look forward to curating that show lineup for the summer, because that will be exactly we will be reinforcing really the pearls of wisdom that we shared in days gone by. So that's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. As we often do, we begin our program by identifying and then eviscerating public enemy number one. Numero uno. And if you're like me, your head has been spinning lately with all the revelations of rampant fraud across the fruited plain. From, you know, it started with the big pulling back of the tent in Minnesota, where you had all the Somali fraud and the fake child care centers and so forth. And that really caused the downfall of goofy Governor Tim Walz, and because, you know, it's a reminder that this kind of fraud happens in blue states and blue cities because they let it happen.
Except not a single elected official or government official in Minnesota has been held accountable. You know, Tim Walz is still out there having rallies, spewing his hateful lies, and no bureaucrat, not a single person who looked the other way. I mean, my God, you know, let's go. I mean, we had the Nuremberg trials, right?
Correct.
Let's have a Nuremberg trial equivalent for this, like, trillions of dollars of fraud. That's kind of where I'm at as a taxpayer.
But, you know, and on the state and local level, the fraud is tolerated simply because there's an appetite to kind of let these things go unchecked because they're too busy, you know, promoting other woke agendas. But, you know, it also is another root cause of it. The larger root cause of it were the years and years of illegal immigration at our border. And these folks who are not all coming here to run legitimate, you know, small businesses, they're coming here to exploit the largesse of our economy, and they've done so not only in Minnesota, but in California, and everywhere they turn over a stone, they find more. The magnitude of the fraud is such that senior advisor to President Trump, Stephen Miller, thinks there may be a silver lining. Play clip one.
I think you can all agree that this is the fastest in history that a government task force has traveled from creation to action. Your typical lead time is going to be a year of meetings before anything happens, and that's if you're lucky. And within weeks of this task force being established, we've seen the largest ever slate of indictments, recovered funds, search warrants, raids, seizures, investigations, and new legal actions to stop, disrupt, and prevent fraud. What we've learned, which is not surprising to those of us who've spent some time in this area, is that fraud is every bit as bad as President Trump said it was, and even worse. So in other words, everything we found either confirms our worst fears or exceeds them. That's the bad news. The good news is that the best team in government under the leadership of Vice President Vance has been assembled to deal with it. And the amount that has been fleeced from us is in the hundreds of billions of dollars. I believe, based on what I've seen and what I've heard, is that we could balance the federal budget if the only dollars that went out of the Treasury went to individuals who were properly, lawfully, correctly eligible to receive them. And that ultimately is going to be what we have to do as a country. In the meantime, because of the Vice President's leadership, you are seeing the most muscular, robust, aggressive, dedicated, determined, and speedy effort to shut down criminal fraud that has not only ever occurred in the history of this country, but in any developed nation.
That guy certainly knows his adjectives.
Oh, yes. He's as steady as they come.
So back to my earlier point. Look, there's been this. There's been paybacks. There's been investigations. Yeah, but to my earlier point, where a bureaucrat or politician who conspired and enabled this has been held accountable.
Right, and Media Research Center points out that one of the reasons that all these revelations have gotten so little traction is that the legacy media and these news organizations that feed all the apps, you know, like Google News,
right.
Google News is the biggest oxymoron, Google and news in the same breath.
Preach it, brother.
But seriously, there's no news coverage of these revelations, and so
they were all in on it. The NGOs, the politicians,
yes.
The nonprofits, the media companies, because don't think they weren't sliding advertising dollars their way, right? No, they set up a whole ecosystem where everyone was in on it. As George Carlin said, it's a big club and we ain't in it, right?
Yeah.
And it's just getting exposed, you know. That's what's happened is we've just moved the fiction series, right? You know, we've just like moved entire shelves of fiction over to the current events section. All this stuff that people speculated, it turns out it's actually true, but on a scale that's like was unimaginable. Like imagine that, like serious people are saying the fraud and entitlement, the fraud in the federal government could be as large as the $2 trillion deficit.
So if you rely on what Media Research Center calls the big four news apps, Apple News, Google News, MSN, and Yahoo News, all of which are only tangentially in the news business, you would be very ill-informed. In fact, Google News alone, whether it was the Southern Poverty Law Center indictment or the Democrat ethics violation by this Sherfyllis McCormick, charged with stealing $5 million in overpaid FEMA funds to their family business. Oh, gee, how did that happen? Or, last but not least, the Minnesota child care fraud stories. Zero stories on any of those three delivered by Google News. And yet, to drive home the point that Stephen Miller was making over at the Small Business Administration, they've already uncovered fraudulent funds that have been clawed back to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. Play clip two.
The other thing about fraud, small businesses are particularly hurt by the fraud because they're some of our biggest taxpayers in the country. And they show up every day. They work hard to provide for their employees, to build their businesses. They're working, they're doing it the honest way. And they see fraudsters taking from the American people. It's taxpayer money. And so you think about, at the SBA, we found $200 billion in fraudulent PPP loans that the Biden administration tried to hide and forgive and sweep under the rug. We've turned the first $22 billion of that over to Treasury for collections and to DOJ for prosecution. Our Inspector General is already announcing that people are going to jail. There are jail sentences now being served. We've announced that 140,000 people have been barred from ever getting SBA loans again, defrauding the government for about $9 billion. So we are going to continue our work under the great leadership of Vice President Vance and appreciate the partnership because it's really accelerated our ability to get the job done.
You know, let's not overlook something she said there toward the end. 140,000 people who are now permanently banned from applying for SBA loans. I mean, that's staggering. Huh. Think about, you know, what would be a typical application for an SBA loan? And I guess it varies widely by business category, but millions of dollars, perhaps? I don't know.
So SBA loans happen through banks, right? So for every one of these fraudulent SBA loans, there had to have been a banker who was supposed to review and know your customer. You know, we go down and deposit $1,000 cash and we get questioned like we're Al Capone, right? But you have these off bank officers and banks writing these fraudulent, you know, and presenting them to the Small Business Administration. Then you got a bureaucrat there who didn't bother to approve to see if they were legit or not. Then you got someone who oversaw all this and may have even ordered that fraud occur. Back to my earlier point and recurring theme, where was any government or official or those bank executives being held accountable? Again, it's a big club and we ain't in it.
We ain't in it. And, you know,
a $200 billion club. This little club was $200 billion.
And, you know, I don't understand how it has come to this because I have personal experience. About 12 years ago, I was in the process of opening a small business. And I remember dealing with this SBA loan officer at the bank I was working with. I won't say the name of the bank because they're not
involved. You know,
they're not awful, but right. But I can't tell you, there were one occasion after another where I was meticulously going down the checklist of the documentation that they were looking for, and I was providing it. And then 2 weeks would go by, and this woman would come back and say, they need this, this, and this. And I said, you've had it for 2 weeks. Oh, they can't find it. You'll have to submit it again. This happened repeatedly over a period of like a couple of months to get this loan.
Yep. So, and how long ago was that?
About 12 years ago.
12 years ago. Are you sure it wasn't like 30?
No.
I just know, here's the point, right, is a couple of things. One is 30, 40 years ago, the government was a filter, right? Then the government became a pump, right? Mm-hmm. Much like some would say high schools and dumbing down diplomas, you know, rather than being a filter, they became a pump, right? Different analogy. Anyway, so, and also, it just became a way to shovel money to constituents. So the government all of a sudden became free and, oh, just give out money, give out money, coupled with, I guarantee you that there were conspirators to do that on that scale. That's not like Steve Woodward, you know, trying to get a $10,000 loan, $200 billion divided by 140,000. This was some significant fraud, and there were people behind this. And I guarantee you there were government officials behind that.
Well, we know about Ilhan Omar. Right. In Minnesota, I'm sure that she had her hand in the in the till with a number
Where's
of
Where's her indictment?
I'm sure she was investing in those Leering centers that Nick Shirley uncovered. Well, I can't wait to get to this week's public embarrassment number one, because anytime I can throw the entire Democrat National Committee under a very large Greyhound bus, maybe more like a Sherman tank in this case. I love to do that, and they, except we really didn't have to throw them under the bus. They kind of crawled under there on their own, based on their own incompetence. So, of course, you know, after the shellacking of Kamala Harris in the 2024 presidential election, in which Donald Trump swept all of the seven swing states, including North Carolina, there was, of course, absolute shock and awe within the Democrat Party. How could this happen? I mean, Kamala was the, you know, she was the presumptive next president of the United States. She was, you know, she was cruising on the crest of the Biden, you know, the Biden wave that was like a tsunami of competence and accomplishments. But how did it happen? We just can't figure it out. And time has gone by, and a lot of the Democrat donors, you know, these people who stupidly give millions of dollars.
We just call them suckers.
To get pedophiles elected or whatever. Suckers, yeah, exactly. They've been asking, you know, we would like an analysis of how this happened. We would like to understand it better so that we can avoid having this happen in the future. Of course, all they would have to say is, well, we didn't learn anything from Hillary Clinton in 2016, so
we might
as well go all the way back to that point. But finally, the Democrat National Committee, under the feckless leadership of this weaselly Ken Martin, decided that it would put forth something to try to keep the blood out of the water. And it ended up, of course, backfiring, as you might imagine, spectacularly. As it always does. Let us play clip six.
You know, if they weren't so crazy, you'd feel bad for the Democratic base here, because, you know, they've been just eating a shit sandwich from the Democratic establishment for so many years in the Trump era. You know, Biden's fine, Biden's fine. Oh, well, Biden's actually out. Kamala's in. She's great. She's going to win this election. She loses and eats shit, and then we're going to hide the evidence. You know? And so, like, you feel bad for some of these people who are like, hey, we want to fix the party. Just show us how we do it. And they're like, nah. We're good, guys. We're good, you know?
Because you got the unions being like, oh, it's more jobs. The enviros being like, no, you're polluting. And then the people being like, yeah, we just hate the Jews.
Well,
and they're trying to sew all that together internally, which is an unenviable task when you're talking about learnings of what you did wrong. And perhaps you just had a real shitty candidate. But it got boiled over to a point where this actually took over all of the conversation within Democratic politics over the last couple of weeks.
The DNC finally releasing its autopsy report on the 2024 presidential election. DNC Chair Ken Martin writing, I am not proud of this product. It does not meet my standards.
Amazing.
And it won't meet your standards. I don't endorse what's in this report or what's left out of it.
That's just such an incredible statement.
I am the head of the DNC, and the buck does not stop with me.
Yeah. It's like, so what do you do around here? He's like, I am releasing this report that I promised I would release, but I just want to make it clear I have nothing to do with this shit, and I don't want it out there. I don't know anything about it, folks.
I don't endorse what's in it or what's left out of it.
Yeah. I can neither confirm
everything.
Nor deny.
What the hell's his job?
That's the thing. If they're trying to figure out what, like, how do we placate these donors? Because the DNC numbers are ugly. They have more in debt that they owe than they actually have cash on hand. And they're trying to like use AI to trick their donors and be like, well, listen, you don't need to know what's in the report. I don't confirm or deny
it's
anything
the learnings,
in the report.
Smug. It's the learnings.
It's an untenable situation for this party. And I think, you know, a lot of people are saying we have to be like worried as Republicans this midterm. The Democrats have to be worried because they don't know what they're doing. They owe more money than they have on hand, and they have a report of trying to figure out what went wrong that they're trying to ignore and hide.
Yes. Well, they're trying, but they're failing. That, by the way, is an excerpt from a podcast that I particularly enjoy and I recommend. It's the Ruthless Podcast. Yeah. It's these four former political strategists, all Republican guys, younger, late 30s, 40s. They're fabulous. I mean, you wouldn't think that a show with four people talking would be manageable, but they do a great job, and I recommend them. That's the Ruthless Podcast. But anyway,
hold on, let me jump in here, Ryan. Yeah. So one thing about it is no coincidence that USAID went away, all that hundreds of billions of dollars of untraceable money. USAID went away, and 2 years later, the DNC is bankrupt. That is not a coincidence. And remember all those NGOs and remember all those nonprofits that like Hollywood stars owned and stuff?
Yeah.
And then you'd see absolutely. Like, you know, Hollywood star A would, you know, write a check to the, you know, Joe Biden for $20 million, right? But then you'd look and, you know, Hollywood star A had a nonprofit that was getting $40 million a year from USAID. Man, they were just laundering money. That's all USAID was. I mean, yep. Other than like a very small percent that actually did something, a very, very small percent, that was a giant money laundering operation.
And yet they have no sense of irony in referring to this recent IRS ruling that left this big pile of money, which Trump has designated for, you know, reduction, you know, taking on the weaponization.
Which was actually Trump's money, by the way, because that was a settlement.
They're calling that a slush fund.
Right.
And they act like that every single person who entered the Capitol on January 6, 2021 was beating and pummeling police officers and shattering right. statues and breaking glass. Most of them were just standing there taking selfies, and yet some of those people have ended up held in jails without trials. They're the ones who need the support of this fund, but we won't get off on that tangent. Anyway, but that's
Marxists are dangerous. I mean, they are, you know, they want you to defy what you see with your own eyes. You know, trust the science. The OK symbol's racist. You know, everything. They twist every single thing.
And I always marvel at the fact that then they act like there's no record of anything they've said in the past.
Right.
You know, and
you
so
see that on the school board.
And they're and we'll get to that. But a brilliant example of that came to the fore this past week when the know-it-all medical commentator from CNN, Sanjay Gupta, who is very sure that he's the smartest man in any room that he walks into. Well, back in 2021, you know, as the pandemic was raging and the tyrants were lapping, you know, just salivating at all the power they were aggregating over all of us who were just trying to live our lives. Gupta was, of course, part of that chorus of people telling us that we had to lock down, wear masks, and get vaccinated over and over again. Well, some fine American patriot happened to notice, came across a clip from sometime last year when he was talking to Gavin Newsom on the governor of California's podcast. And this will provide you a contrast in what Gupta is saying now about the vaccine and what he was saying in 2021. And then we're going to share with you a whole bunch of crazy from 2021. But let's start by playing clip three.
And this was a communications problem, was that they seemed to also intimate that it would protect you from getting COVID at all, from carrying it. And there was not great evidence behind that. And, you know, we reported as such that you don't have great evidence that shows that. When you have a vaccine that's protecting it against illness, it's usually protecting in your lower respiratory, in your lungs. So you're not getting that really, really sort of a deep illness. but you might still have it in your mucosa, in your mouth, in your nose, in your upper airway. So you could potentially still be carrying it and still potentially spread it. That was, I think, a communications error. And I think, frankly, Governor, I think it led to a lot of distrust overall of these mRNA vaccines. You said I couldn't get COVID if I got this. Well, I got COVID and I spread it. So what is this? Is this a vaccine or is it not a vaccine? That was a problem.
So Dr. Gupta apparently didn't think that anybody would remember anything that happened just four or five short years ago in 2021, when we were all, of course, you know, you'll remember everywhere you went, if you weren't wearing a mask or something, people would look at you like you were, you know, swinging a machete at them or firing a, you know, a submachine gun into the grocery store. And then literally people would ask you if you had been vaccinated, like people who you barely knew just for their own peace of mind. And it was absolutely infuriating. And, you know, it was a dark time.
If you ever wondered how, like, someone like Hitler could have come to power in the 30s, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you're like, my God, what could have caused? Because, you know, Germans are, like, very methodical, you know, logically thinking people.
Yes.
Obviously, they can get carried away from time to time, right? But, well, you know, you're sitting there thinking, my God, how could someone like that happen? And then you look at what they convinced the American public of during COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the same socialists using the same propaganda techniques. You know, it was Hitler was a socialist and they used that propaganda to bring him to power. And look at how effective that propaganda has turned neighbor against neighbor, mm-hmm. and family member against family member, creating feuds that didn't used to exist but yet continue to this day.
And yet listen to what Sanjay Gupta from CNN was saying in 2021 at the height of all this hysteria.
What I would say is that the science, I think, has been clear for some time on not only how well these vaccines work, as you alluded to, but also how well they protect you, how well they work in terms of preventing you from getting sick, but also how well they work in terms of preventing you from becoming infected. And most importantly and most recently, how well they work in terms of making it unlikely you would pass the infection on to someone else. You remember, Jake, you say, well, I'm vaccinated. Why do I continue to wear a mask? Why do I need that? Well, the idea was that maybe you could be an unwitting carrier, silent carrier of the virus still. But one of the big things was the data that came out over the past couple of weeks really showing that even if you've been vaccinated, and even if you tested positive for the virus after you've been vaccinated, which does happen, rarely, but does happen, the data is now increasingly clear that you'd be very, very unlikely to then transmit the virus to somebody else.
Yeah, right. Well, that, of course, turned out to be complete BS. You know, and in a lot of professions, if you were spewing information that later turned out to be that incorrect, whether knowingly or not, you would not have a job. But apparently, you know, Gupta is still around, and so are a lot of the other members of the media who were doing the exact same thing in 2021. Play clip four.
These civilized people, they'll eat each other.
You are the unvaccinated. You are the problem. It is the unvaccinated who are the problem, period, end of story.
The only people that you can blame, this isn't shaming, this is the truth. Maybe they should be shamed, but the unvaccinated.
It's time to start blaming the unvaccinated folks, not the regular folks.
Anyone you came into contact with will blame you, as will the rest of us who have done the right thing by getting vaccinated.
Because frankly, we know that we can't trust the unvaccinated.
I think it's time to get our moral house in order, Anderson. It's the unvaccinated who are the threat.
All those vaccinated folks are going to start wearing masks to protect the unvaccinated folks. It's called a Christian value.
You're basically punishing the vaccinated for the sins of the unvaccinated.
People are not behaving honorably. The unvaccinated are basically saying, well, it's open season for me. I can do whatever I want as well.
The unvaccinated are basically beating their breasts, running around the country saying, we don't care, we're living free, and so forth.
Yes, because it's America.
but our patience is wearing thin.
The unvaccinated, a group that includes children and people acting like children. And the rest of us are starting to get pissed off.
The vaccinated feel the unvaccinated are making me upset or angry.
This is not about freedom.
Didn't sound very angry.
Personal choice.
Well, my freedom is being kind of disturbed here. No. Screw your freedom.
The other day, Howard Stern weighed in with a much different approach.
Those who I get my advice.
When are we
going to
stop putting up with the idiots in this country and just say, you now, it's mandatory to get vaccinated? Their freedom.
But you're treading on our freedom and you're making other people sick, and really, you're killing other people.
Okay, well. Well, I feel so bad, don't you? I feel so guilty.
God.
I may have to toss myself in front of a jet barreling down the runway, which somebody did in Denver the other day. I don't
assume
it was a Democrat.
But. One thing about COVID is it sure did let you know which side, where people were on the political spectrum. I mean, there were some, you know, don't get me wrong, there are, you know, friends of mine who were, you know, maskers and vaccine. I'm not using that as a test. I'm just talking about the propagandists, you know.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And the fanatics, you know, look, if you want to get a shot, that's your own business based upon your risk and this and that. If you want to wear a mask, by all means. But, you know, don't, like, turn your lights off and look through the blinds to see if, like, Dave Hensley has a couple people over so you can call the health department tomorrow. And that's what these people, those people were the same people who would turn in Anne Frank.
Mm-hmm.
The same people who would, like, right. call government, oh my gosh, Steve Woodward, they're the same little socialists that turned in Anne Frank.
Yeah.
It's the propaganda, the techniques, the people who thought they were morally superior by doing the bidding of the evil government, you know, the parallel is there.
It'll be interesting to see if they try to bring one. You know, they thought they had something going with this cruise ship virus, and now they're rooting for the Ebola.
It must be election season.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they ramp it up for the midterm or if they save it for 28 and the next presidential. But you know, another memory that we have, David, going back to 2022, where's Bob Hope when you need him? Thanks for the memories. You'll recall that then Governor Roy Cooper, who now is running for U.S.
Yes.
Senate, was pounding his skimpy little chest about how North Carolina was going to become the electric vehicle epicenter of the country because we were signing a big deal and we were incentivizing this Vietnamese electric vehicle company called VinFast.
Yep.
They were going to build an enormous plant that would lead to an investment on their part of $2 billion and create 7,500 jobs right here in North Carolina. And now VinFast has become Vin gone.
Yep.
Because now the state of North Carolina, through its feckless attorney general, is suing them for failing to build their plant, which they're apparently have no intention of doing now because, of course, the American appetite for electric vehicles has proven to be extremely limited, and there's not going to be a Vietnamese EV plant in North Carolina.
Yeah, so who called that? Who said way back when that plant will never get built?
I think that I recall David Hensley saying that, and I don't, you know, I don't remember everything that I've ever heard, but that sticks in my memory.
That's because I've reminded you several times over the years. This was once again Carnac the Magnificent, right? Going back to Johnny Carson days, for those who remember.
Right.
But those people, they use eminent domain to get rid of confiscate multi-generational farms, churches, etc. And they built this giant mega site that back then you knew this was a craze that was unsustainable. VinFast was always like a penny stock that like made it to $20 or something. You know, the stock cratered like 2 years ago. Anyway, they used every tool they had to steal this land from these people for Cooper's folly, right? Everyone knew. But then, you know, the legislature isn't exactly innocent of this either, because if I remember correctly, I think the legislature built like a little electric electric car training, VOTEC training center in Montgomery County in anticipation of this. And they were all out there with their shovels taking credit. Yet another boondoggle, because government programs don't work. You know, it's a government economy, right?
Correct.
But then we even saw it here locally, right? If you remember, you probably don't, but I will remind you, if you go back when my good friend Bob Levy was chair, and
of the school board
and I saw him just today, by the way, look a little scraggledy. If you see him, say hi, but and you'll know what I'm talking about. But anyway, this VinFast thing was going down, and we had many discussions on CTE. You can go watch the video. And he literally wanted to get rid of all of our internal combustion based VOTEC, CTE. He wanted to get rid of all of our gas-powered, diesel-powered engine, automotive repair, and immediately turn it over to electric vehicles because that was the jobs of the future. And he literally wanted to do that. I had to fight our chair. He would have 100% bought into that hyperbole, and we would be turning out students for which there are no jobs.
Yeah, that would have been like going full bore on teaching students of another era how to manufacture 8-track tapes or...
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. I mean, that's not a perfect analogy, by the way, is looking backwards, but well, whatever. We'll play with it. Sorry. But anyway, look, the point is Levy was wrong, and once again, I was right.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. That's where you were going with
that's,
this.
That's 100%.
Right, exactly. Well, you know... this was in Chatham County, and I guess there's now discussion that that not only are they going to I guess sue them to reclaim the land. Now there's a possibility that an actual real automaker may come in and.
Oh, wow, that'd be good.
And build a plant there, and
yeah, hopefully, you know. I was being a little more cynical. I figured it'd end up like in the Cooper family, and a solar farm would be there.
Well, there's certainly that possibility, but no, it's funny because everywhere you turn, electric vehicles have, you know, the certainty that they would become instant overnight successes has cost, you know, automakers billions of dollars.
Oh my God, do you know? The damage that the Democrats, forget the $1 trillion, you know, green energy deal that they passed, that they just funneled money to their buddies and their sham companies, forget that $1 trillion. But also all the mandates that they put on the automakers to, you know, electric cars, unachievable gas mileage things. I mean, like Ford had, I forget, like a $12 billion write-off. These companies, because nobody wanted it, it was just the government making the automakers do it and then the government subsidizing it. When those subsidies went away, these automakers, I bet, took collectively hundreds of billions of dollars. And that was 100% caused by the leftists and their, you know, unicorn fart utopian society based upon green energy.
And, you know, I noticed this is an anecdotal example. I have a friend from the Chicago suburbs who operates a very successful luxury automobile brokerage. He's not really a car dealer. He aggregates all these luxury vehicles from, you know, auctions and other places, and most of them are high end, low mileage. You can find everything under the sun on his website. And I was perusing around there not long ago, and I kept coming across these BMWs and other vehicles that seemed to be priced pretty incredibly low. And it suddenly I realized they were all the electric BMWs that you could have for, you know, half price with 12,000 miles on them or something.
Can I tell a couple anecdotes while we're on this topic?
Yes, it's a very interesting topic.
So Porsche came out with an electric Porsche. And, you know, I mean, it was I guess it was impressive by electric standards, right? But if you bought, and you know, they're a six-figure car because they're a Porsche, but if you bought one of these Porsches, if you took it to the Porsche dealer and wanted to trade it in, the resale value, the market of that is zero. They literally, like, the Porsche dealer that sold it to you will not for any price take it as a trade-in. Could you imagine? The Dodge Challenger, you know, man, Dodge was at the top of their game. They had a 1,050 horsepower Charger, right? I mean, a drag strip, like, set the record, like, do donuts, go and had a parachute on it if you wanted it, right? Like, factory car, like, they were on top of their game. They went to an electric Charger. They called the they went from a Challenger to a whatever, Charger to Challenger. Anyway, so they built an electric Challenger. And the Dodge dealer at Lillington up there, where I bought a few Dodges from, they made that dealer take 30 of them. Made them. Like, 4 months later, they sold one, mm-hmm. and it was to an employee at a deep. They cannot give those things away. And that's what government mandates do, is they create inefficiencies in the market. And it's just like the grocery store in New York City, waiting to see how that boondoggle turns out.
The government grocery store.
That'll be a $50 loaf of bread.
Well, it was never intended that you would ever want to recharge a Charger. Right. I mean, that's
right. Right.
That's it's so wrong.
I always thought it was funny because, like, if I was developing a muscle car, I wouldn't call it the Challenger. I'd call it, like, maybe the Champion. Right. The Challenger is like the people behind, like, the Champion.
Right.
That's why I'm not a Dodge Mopar guy.
I want to pivot here to a totally unrelated topic, but it got my attention this week. And it involves an event that's coming up in June called Pride Fest. Mm. And as you might imagine, it is a LGBTQ++ event. It is essentially like a day of, you know, music and arts and food and all this stuff at the Weymouth Center. And, you know, we all know that Sandhills Pride is always lurking around here and showing up in various parades and things with their multicolored dyed hair and other freaky things like that. And last year, you might recall that in the June has been hijacked as Pride Month. We only get Memorial Day and Veterans Day, but we get Pride Month. And last June, you may recall, a few citizens drove by the new U.S. Golf Association headquarters in Pinehurst near the resort.
Yes.
And there above at the top of the towering flagpole where Old Glory was flying in triumphantly, the Stars and Stripes, beneath it was this limp little flag that was kind of trying to keep up. And by golly, it was the Rainbow Pride gay rights flag.
It was the full up LGBTQ where it has like the little, you know, pointings, like, you know,
yes,
like arrow things,
right?
No, it was like the 31 color, 31
exactly. It was
one.
The official flag, and flying in front of the United States Golf Association in Pinehurst, Moore County, North Carolina. Yep. Well, needless to say, in less than 24 hours, that flag and hopefully the junior lieutenant who approved putting it on the rolling it up the pole was gone from sight.
I'm not sure that
24 to 48 hours it was gone.
I'm not sure that was a junior lieutenant that did that.
You could be right about that.
I think that might be part of their ethos, their company ethos.
And your point is about to be proven.
Oh, once again.
Let's go 11 months on to the present.
Yeah.
It has come to our attention that the Pride Fest is taking place on June 13th, and at the bottom of its posters promoting the event are several co-sponsors of the event. And some of them are just local businesses, and they've shown
whatever, up. They can do whatever.
They've shown up before on for these Pride things. They were sponsors of the famous drag show in December of 22. But wouldn't you know it, lower left of this poster, the USGA logo on the Pride Fest poster. Mm. Now, I don't know about you, but I think if you go, when you think about the United States Golf Association and the history of golf in America and the fact that it's now aligned with the home of American golf, Pinehurst, the famous number two and others. When you think about the USGA, I don't see any possible way that you can rationalize going down this woke pathway, because it is a nonprofit organization. It relies on membership dues. I went back and checked. I've been sending dues to the USGA for 32 years.
You better stop that.
And, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's $150 a year, whatever it is.
Yeah, you can just zero that out and buy more, you know, quality adult beverages somewhere.
But I have alerted our local elected, our members of the General Assembly, who, you know, played a significant role in bringing the USGA here, along with its World Golf Hall of Fame, which is, you know, a fabulous Hall of Fame, regardless of this story. But I just don't understand how they can think they're going to go down these woke pathways without catching a lot of backlash. And I hope they do, because it's ridiculous. It's absurd to see USGA on this poster for to support the LGBTQ community.
Well, what about our tax dollars that were spent to incentivize them to move down here?
Yeah, how about it?
And, you know, they were based in New Jersey. Their values were known. You know, they were sponsoring this sort of stuff before they were courted down here. But once again, you know, go back to the newspapers. Go up there and see what politicians were in the picture. See what politicians took credit for it. And, you know, that's why, like, I'm never, like, super, like, on the school board. You know, I look into that and I take, you know, I want to do business with companies, you know, assuming the good value and all. I want to do business with companies whose values align with mine. I think the people of Moore County want that. So, you know, when I'm on the school board and I look at a company and I'm like, nah. You know, they're, you know, we don't believe in that, you know, DEI here. So, you know, we're not going to hire you. You know, more politicians should do that. And then we wouldn't end up with people like USGA here. You know what we wouldn't do? We wouldn't have them down here accepting government funds and then, you know, doing this stuff. It would have been part of the negotiations. It would have been discussed up front. Hey, you know, we kind of noticed, you know, you're a little left to center here. You know, let's put something down on paper where you're going to be if you get these incentives. You know, whatever, right?
And, you know, I know what the left is going to say. They're going to say, well, there they go again, bashing, you know, the LGBTQ community. We're not doing that at all. You know, if the USGA happens to put on an event like the U.S. Women's Open, where there are several, you know, lesbian golfers. So,
right.
Great.
This has not. So
here, I don't care.
So here's what the left.
And the golfers don't want that to be their identity either. They want the golf to be their identity.
Here's what the leftists do. And then conservatives fall for it. And I push back against it. So, you know, oh, if you hate, you know, the LGBTQ movement, you're against gay people. No, not at all. I'm not against gay people at all. But the LGBTQ movement, all these little chapters and stuff, like the National Organization of Women, I don't know any woman who agrees with their values. They don't represent my wife. They don't represent your wife. They represent leftists. So when I attack the National Organization of Women, it's because they're a far left-wing radical organization. I'm not attacking women. I'm attacking that leftist organization. Same thing with the LGBTQ organization, because inevitably they are part of the same coalition as the national organization, you know, these far left-wing extremist groups, but they set themselves up. So if you criticize them, then you're against whatever, women, gays, you know, whatever that far left special interest group is, and it's completely not true.
And then, of course, what they try to gloss over is that they also have a component, which we saw in the battle for getting the graphically sexual books out of our school libraries. They have a whole grooming mission as well. They don't say it, but it's clear that that is a distinct possibility. If you're going to have these events that are sort of like, you know, oh, this is just a picnic, you know, this is just a picnic. It's just for, you know, it happens to be the Sandhills Pride picnic, but whatever. Well, people are going to bring kids to that kind of thing. And I think it's repulsive and abhorrent.
There were across the country and probably globally, but certainly across the country, there were and are networks who groom our children into deviant lifestyles that their parents wouldn't approve. Or sometimes their parents do approve, but it's a fact that the grooming occurs. You can talk about how much it occurs or this and that. But, I mean, my God, the conspiracy is clearly there.
Absolutely. And it's – so anyway, for those of you who are
– anyway, that's what I'm against. I'm not against – you know, the conclusion is I'm not against gay people. I'm against these far-left organizations that want to do these hideous things.
I just don't understand – you know, and furthermore, USGA, if you want to go around sponsoring – local community organizations. There are a roster.
How about sponsoring a Boy Scout troop?
How about the food banks?
How about the sponsoring the VFW?
Yeah. I mean, give me a break.
No, they choose the LGBTQ thing. Isn't that something?
I just attended this Adult and Teen Challenge Gala with the work that they do to get, you know, drug addicted people, including J.D. Vance's mother, that type of person, straight and get their lives turned around. It's remarkable. And yet, I didn't see the USGA logo at that event.
No, they're out sponsoring Sand Hills Pride because that's where their values are. That's what they choose to do.
And the same kind of unhinged people that we're talking about here have been showing up at these ICE detention facilities around the country. We saw it big time in like Chicago. We saw it, of course, in Minneapolis where a couple of citizens decided to take on federal agents, and that didn't end very well for them. Well, in the past week or two, we've seen a new showdown in Newark, New Jersey, at some ICE detention center. And I think if you're a legal immigrant and you have to spend any amount of time in Newark, you're going to be probably wanting to self-deport. But in any case, the crazed leftists have been taking on the federal agents up in Newark and trying to block operations up there, disrupting operations, creating a chaos, creating endangering innocent people in some cases. And along comes our new Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Wayne Allen Mullen. Did I say that right? Wayne Allen? Yeah. No. Mark Wayne Mullen. I'm sorry. There's a Wayne Allen some root, I think. Mark Wayne Mullen, Oklahoma former senator, is now the DHS secretary. I thought he came up is pursuing a brilliant way of dealing with these cities that are so-called sanctuary cities, protecting
awesome.
Illegal immigrants.
Yes.
Let's play clip five.
If they're going to not allow us to go out and arrest the worst of the worst, and then when we call for assistance at the facilities. That the street, it belongs to the city. If it belonged to us, we would take care of it, but it belongs to the city, and they're barricading our employees from coming in and out of the facility, then why are we processing international flights into the airport there? And we are currently, which we're not initiate yet, but we're currently drawing up plans to say, listen, in these sanctuary cities where the local radical left Democrats aren't allowing us to do our job and enforce federal laws, then we shouldn't be processing international flights into their cities either, because they don't want us to enforce immigration, but they want us to process immigration at their facilities. Nothing about that makes sense to me.
Preach it. You know what? That is what I voted for.
Exactly.
I am proud of a fellow Okie.
Now, I don't know, you know, if logistically that would be possible. I don't know if the airlines would sue the federal government for stopping them from, flying into Newark International Airport or into Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Nothing stops the airlines from flying in there. They can fly planes in there all they want. Their passengers can't depart the containment area.
Good point.
Their passengers can deplane. They can go buy, liter bottles of Evian for, overpriced.
Right.
They can get like a reheated pretzel and an overpriced beer, and then they can get back on their plane. They can fly somewhere else, but they're not going to go through customs because...
Yes, that's a good point. They'll never leave the international arrivals area because there will be no customs officials to process them.
Yeah, there's nothing that prevents Air France or Delta or whoever from flying that wonderful, Dreamliner right there into Newark International Airport. Can't leave the containment area.
One of the crappiest airports in the world, but what can I tell you? That's the airport where the guy, the plane was coming in to land and it knocked the truck over on the
that was something, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was something. And nobody died. I mean, everybody survived.
Remarkable. Incredible. Remarkable.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.